Hey, I'm Pauline, and this is a Journey to Fulfillment podcast. Learn from awesome people who have gone through personal transformations so you can be inspired to grow, create, and live a truly fulfilling life. Hello, everyone. I've got Crystal Holm on the show today. Very excited to speak to you and hear more about your story. So, Crystal, please introduce yourself to everyone and what do you do?
Hello, I'm Crystal. It's so good to be here. I am a feng shui designer and a clutter expert, and I help entrepreneurs and work from home moms to declutter and design a workspace that really empowers them to create the life and business that they want.
Wow, that is really fascinating because I never really thought about, I guess, how workspace or like things around our environment can impact the way that we think, feel, and act, I suppose. How did your journey all start into getting into all this work?
You know, Pauline, I think it probably started even when I was a child, you know, growing up. Honestly, my Barbie dream house was my favorite toy to play with. You know, I didn't even play with Barbie that much. I played with my Barbie dream house and just spent a lot of time, you know, decorating in that space. And I love decorating my room. I did decorate my room quite a bit, even as a teenager, you know, so it was sort of a natural thing for me to go into interior design as a career. I actually grew up in a very abusive home. And so I made a lot of sort of like safe space for myself, you know, growing up. And it was one of my escapes, right, from sort of what was happening in my life. I went to school to become an interior designer. And in my psychology class, we had to write a paper on something related to our field of study. And we had to each do something unique, right? The teacher would only allow one person to write on one topic, which was a good thing. We didn't want to hear the same paper over and over again. But at the time, I knew, I had heard about feng shui. I knew a little bit about it. I knew it had to do with energy, but I didn't know enough. I didn't really know much of anything about it. And so I decided I would write my paper on that. And it really, really piqued my interest. I actually started studying energy when I was about 9. Mm. My parents divorced when I was 8, and they both remarried when I was 9. My mother married a very abusive pedophile. And my dad remarried a witch. And so I sort of learned about energy and magic from this very, very young age. Mm-hmm. And so I'd always sort of studied energy.
What was it about this energy that you were attracted to at a young age?
Well, for me, at such a young age and being in, everything changed so drastically, right? My whole family kind of just fell apart. And then I was all of a sudden in this nightmare of a life. And when my dad remarried, before my mom married her boyfriend, I actually told her that he was abusing me. I told her what he was like. I even gave her an ultimatum, like, it's him or me. He's got to go. And she married him. And so I decided at that moment that I was never going to be like her. And I actually started looking for someone else, like to mentor me. I mean, I didn't know that word at the time, but I was looking for somebody else. And my dad remarried this amazing, amazing woman. And I adored her, right? She just became that new role model for me. And she taught me about magic, right? And energy. And that, so, but where I was in my life at the time, that sort of felt like my only way to escape, right? We had a custody battle, like my dad lost. There was no way for me to get out of this nightmare other than some sort of magical miracle. And so for me, I'd studied energy and magic as a sort of like all little girls do, right? I mean, all little girls are whipping up potions in their backyard. It's kind of a normal thing for us to do, but I continued studying it always. It was always a fascination for me because it was something that I had learned at such a young age. When I was in this class and I started studying feng shui and I was studying like the psychology of space and feng shui and how it sort of all fit together, you know, feng shui is about the study of energy, which is why I chose as my topic. And so I could really just sort of take all of this knowledge that I had gained, you know, like 20 years worth of knowledge that I'd studied energy and sort of like start applying it to, well, how does this apply to my field of study and the psychology of it? And it sort of tied all of these things that interested me together. And now it was one paper. And so I thought I would learn everything that I needed to know about it. And at the end of that semester, I didn't know anything more than where I had started. Actually, I feel like I was even more confused than when I had started, but I really was intrigued with it. Right. And I wanted to know more. And so like I finished my degree and I just started studying feng shui on the side and kind of applying it to my life to see like, how does this work? Right. Life hadn't really turned out the way I wanted it to. And I was in school and, you know, so then I finished school and was like moving on to my career and thinking like, well, you know, I can still apply feng shui. The whole point is to make a better life for yourself, right? Be energetically in alignment with this better life. And so I was still like applying it to my life. But only mine, you know, and I was working in my career and I was a couple years, into working as an interior designer and I moved to Hawaii and I was working in my dream job. I literally just started my dream job working in high-end residential design. And there was a design that had been submitted to the client like before I started. And the client reviewed it and actually sent it back to my boss saying they couldn't accept it because the feng shui was off. Right. It was a client.
As in because you already put the work through to that particular building or like unit or something, but then they rejected that?
Well, it was an interior design project and the client was, we had international clients. They were from China. And so they were very familiar with feng shui, but the design firm that I went to work for, nobody there knew anything about feng shui. They just made a design and submitted it to the client and the client looked at it. And since they knew about feng shui, they sent it back and they were like, yeah, we won't be able to live with this. It needs to be fixed.
Yeah. So mismatch.
Right. And so my boss was like, oh no, like, what do we do? She didn't know anything about feng shui. She pulled the whole design team together and was like, can anybody help? And I wanted to be recognized. I had just started, like, you know, I wanted to stand out. And so I volunteered and I was the only person that volunteered to help. And so she kind of handed it to me and was like, okay, fix this. And it was my first time really applying it to someone other than myself. And I certainly had some moments of imposter syndrome, really, because I knew that the client knew feng shui. I didn't know how much they knew compared to how much I knew. Like, do I know more than them? I don't know if what I know is accurate, right? Because I'm still just sort of, at that point, I was still sort of piecemealing it together from all these various books. But I really fell in love with the process of this. I'm going to take this beautiful design and I'm going to make it energetically aligned with them and their, you know, their space, but also the vision for what it looks like, you know? And I really fell in love with that whole process.
What was it that you discovered for yourself before even taking on this client and this new challenge, with all the pieces that you had learned at that point? Do you remember what kind of changes or things that you experienced that really helped you out or made you believe in, I guess, this process even more about feng shui?
Well, at that time, I could see where sometimes it would work and sometimes it wouldn't. Like sometimes I would see improvements and sometimes not. And so I was still not sure, like at that time, what I knew it could work because I understood the energy and, you know, the concept of everything is made up of energy. And if you just get into alignment with the flow, because I had spent my whole life already studying that, like you just need to be in alignment with the flow of energy. Like you need to direct it to where you want it to be. And so, but I hadn't quite mastered it yet. But this was actually the catalyst, this client, that I took on because I did fall in love with it so much. This, I wanted to incorporate it, more and I wanted to know more. And so I actually found a school that taught traditional feng shui. And so I went back to school and studied it. And then I really started to more see why I wasn't seeing results before, right? I started understanding there's so much misinformation out there, because of, you know, just fake feng shui, I guess is what I call it more than anything. It's not, there's a whole lot of fake feng shui out there. And so before this, you know, before I started actually studying it and reading all these books, I didn't know that there wasn't, you know, there was a right way and a wrong way and that this book might have good information. Like I didn't know how to tell them apart. Mm-hmm. And so, but going back to school to really study it, then I started learning, oh, these were all of, you know, like the whys and the wherefores and what to look for. You know, it had only been, I mean, it had been around for thousands of years in China where it had been studied, but it had only really been popular in Western culture for 5 or 6 years at that point. When mm-hmm. I first started studying it, you know,
how long ago was that? Can I ask?
That was in 1995. Well, when I first started studying, it was in 2000. Roughly.
Yeah. Okay. So it's relatively still new and like to the market.
Right. In Western culture, but it sort of came on the market very quickly. And in 1995, it just, everybody jumped on the bandwagon and started writing books, right? Mm-hmm. Like I'm an expert. And so, you know, as things happened, a whole lot of misinformation got put out there very quickly from, you know, people just trying to make a quick buck.
Yeah.
So
I'm wondering in terms of you said there's lots of like misinformation out there. Uh-huh. Because I guess, yeah, like if someone's new or they don't know much about it and they're going into it, like I'll tell you what comes to mind is that I'm thinking there's instruments or things that you pop into place in an environment and there is some kind of, depending on where you position certain items, pieces of furniture or things, that it emits some kind of energy. And if you're placing things in a certain spot, then it would provide the right kind of energy or some kind of different alignment or whether it's not going to work, something along those lines. I'm wondering, like, what would be a misinformation, common one that would come up for people?
Like a common one that I hear a lot, as a matter of fact, because of the work that I do, a common one that I hear a lot from people is that they have heard that you have to have a water fountain or something in your office to help flow of money in your business. And that is one of those things that's a misinformation. Now, water is one of the five elements that you use to remedy misalignments in feng shui, but there's no always, right? Like you don't always need a water feature in your office. Only if you're need a water element do you need a water, you know what I'm like?
Right.
Only if you need a water remedy. But some books will tell you like always do this or never do that, and those are usually when I find, yeah, that is not information,
right?
You know, or the things that are like you need a specific you know, you need a statue of a white dragon, or you know, you have to always paint your front door red. those things are fake feng shui. Those are misinformation. Mm-hmm. They are not applicable. Sometimes they're not applicable in any way, shape, or form, and it's just completely made up. Some mm-hmm. of it is like, it's, okay. it just doesn't apply.
So yeah, there's like very specific things that are, that people say you need, but maybe that's not really the case.
Right.
What are the elements? You mentioned about elements, water being one. How many elements are there, and or are there only a few, and what are they?
There's five. Okay. There's five, and there's only five.
Okay,
they're five. Wood. Mm-hmm. They are wood, fire, earth, metal, and water. And they go in that cycle. So those are the only feng shui remedies that there are. So if you see anybody saying you have to have a, you know, whatever, something other than those five things, then it's fake feng shui, right? So they might be saying you have to have a ceramic bowl of something here, but what they really mean is you have to have an earth element. But they don't know that for sure, because you wouldn't know that without doing the calculations.
Okay. And then, so each of these elements would have different energies? Like, do they all have to go together as a combination, or is it like bits and pieces depending on what the person is aligned to?
Well, they go in a cycle, right? They go sort of in a circle. One leads into the other. But what happens is, the best way to explain it is like you have an energetic frequency and your house has an energetic frequency. And sometimes those things can clash, right? And so if there's maybe too much of one element, then what you need is the other element to balance that out again, right? To because they can start going in a destructive cycle, right? There's a good, the productive cycle, but then there's also a destructive cycle, right? And so if you have, say, like in bathrooms, for example, bathrooms tend to have a lot of metal and a lot of water energy, right? I mean, if you think about what's mm-hmm. in your bathroom, lots of water, lots of metal, right? There's all sorts of pipes and plumbing, and then you've got your fixtures and all of that. But that can be too much. And depending on where your bathroom is in your house, especially, it might be way too much. And so you would need to cut that by adding an earth element to reduce those and balance them out again. But not usually, it's not usually all five. Usually it's like you have two and you need a third to balance them out.
Right. Okay. How that. So when you took on this project, with the client or your first client, working with someone who knows a little bit about feng shui, how can you satisfy the client in their needs and ensure that, I mean, are they the expert in this sense, or how do people really get that balance of like, I know that if you're working with me and these things are placed, that it's in the right order or it's right for me because you're the external person. Whereas like for them, like they have obviously their own energies and their own needs. So how do you get that sort of balance with the process of implementing the feng shui?
Oh, well, there's a lot of math calculations for it, really, that you have to sit down with all of the numbers and do the calculations to make sure that it's energetically aligned. Then once I have that information, then I literally work from the floor plan and say, okay, so these are all the remedies that we need. And because of like with that first client, I fell so much in love with the process of making it you know, I want my space to be me. I want it to reflect me, you know, they don't want it to reflect me. They want it to reflect them is what I mean. And so when I work with clients, I literally, we create sort of a design theme for them. And so once I know what all the remedies are needed, I put them into the design so that they just disappear, right? You aren't noticing them like, oh, look, there is a feng shui remedy right there. That's a good indicator, actually, that's fake feng shui. if you see like,
so you
these,
can't really
like
tell.
You shouldn't be able to tell. No. If you see like Bagua mirror hanging on somebody's door, it's some someone has taught them some fake feng shui that they think they're doing something right. And unfortunately, they're not. Real feng shui should be invisible to the eye. Like, it should just be seamlessly incorporated into the space with the decor. And so I work with my clients to do that, to align them with it and bring their vision really to life, right?
Mm. Yeah. I'm really curious about the mathematical side, because you said that like it's like numbers and working out like the calculations. Is that to do with the client themselves or the space?
Both.
Of the living space. Okay. So you're getting both. A match for both.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that they are, it's almost like a marriage, right? You're going to have houses that you fit with energetically and houses that you don't. And then there's going to be inside those houses, there's going to be different spaces that you fit in better and different that you don't. And it's just it's
fascinating. Yeah. So it's a very much calculated. It's not just like, we'll just, you know, there's structure to it.
Right. It's not all that woo woo. I know a lot of people think it's very woo woo and very intuitive, and it's just mad. It's not. It's literally just math and science. It's looking at the and making sure that everything all fits together. And the magic part, the art part, because it's really an art and a science, right? The magic and the art is where you get good at hiding the remedies in plain sight and really just making it a beautiful space that reflects the client, you know, and their vision, mm-hmm. but not these ugly, plunky, here's a remedy of something. Like, you don't, that's not what we want. That's not the goal.
Yeah.
For us. Yeah. So, yeah.
I love that combination of like being art, I guess, in the form of like aesthetically pleasing in fitting the interior design, but then also like, you know, fitting the clients and their needs versus the space and placement. So there's right. lots that go into it, plus the mathematical, which gives the science.
Right. Because of the people that, even because of each client that I work with, has their own unique vision and their own goals, right? Some clients come to me because they have, you know, they don't have as many clients as they want, or they're not making as much money as they want. And so, you know, they want to get energetically in alignment with that. Like, mm-hmm. for me, when I started, mine was more of a healing journey in my body when I really started applying it. And that was my goal, you know, to get into alignment with, was this sort of healing vision. And so, yeah, it's everybody's unique, and every goal is different. Every vision is different. Not to mention then, of course, then you've got all the design styles too, right? Like, what I like might not be at all what you like. So that's totally what makes it an art and the fun part, right? That's like the best
creative
part
side.
Of getting to work together. Yeah. Because we do this sort of a co-creation thing, right? When I work with clients, it's me bringing their vision to life.
Mm.
Right.
That's beautiful. Right? I want to go into the healing journey. What was it that the transformation, or, you know, how did your life change as a result of the feng shui that you implemented over time?
So actually, shortly after I finished studying feng shui at school, you know, I was taking on clients of my own. I was still working full-time in my job, but I was just, you know, really wanting to make that leap into entrepreneurship. And before that could happen, I actually hurt myself at work. And I couldn't walk. I was stuck at home on bed rest. And because it was a workman's comp injury, it ended up being a very big and long, drawn out battle for me to even get medical care. Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, while that was going on, my body was really deteriorating. you know, it was getting worse and worse. I couldn't really get proper medical treatment, because every time my doctor would try to refer me to someone, the insurance companies would deny it. And so I was sort of left on my own, right, to figure this out. And I was like, okay, well, I'm at home on, you know, on bed rest. Now's a great time to start my business. Like, there's no job to interfere with my business. And so I was really kind of diving into that. And it was a few months into my business, actually about 6 months into that, where I was working, and I had hired a coach and to learn all of the business things. And she actually hired me to design her new office space. And yes, it was perfect, actually, because what it reminded me of when I was designing her office space for her, she asked me for room to do yoga. And it reminded me of way back when I'd worked in that high-end residential design firm. You know, we worked with a lot of entrepreneurs there, and they all did the same, some sort of self-care during the day. And I was like, okay, I'm going to do self-care, right? I need to do something. I can't only focus on business. I have to do some kind of something for my body too. And so I decided to create a space for me to do yoga, to try to at least slow down the damage to my body, do something so I didn't end up in a wheelchair forever. I was getting to the point where, you know, I couldn't really walk to go to the store. I'd have to use the wheeled shopping carts, and I couldn't really get around outside of my apartment without something to help me. And so I really went to my roots, and I was like, I moved into this new apartment, and I did feng shui. I feng shui the space specifically for this goal of healing my body. I'd been working with clients for a bit, and I sort of was, everything that I had learned from working with all of them, I started now actually applying it to my life. Like, I was going in reverse now, right? I had started applying it to myself in the beginning. Then I started applying it to clients and kind of stopped applying it to me. And now all this stuff I'd learned from clients, I sort of started applying to myself. And I started doing this, started doing self-care first and doing the yoga, and started getting a little bit better. And I started, you know, like, I was really stuck in figuring out the business thing. But as my body started getting unstuck, I started noticing, like, my thoughts started getting unstuck too. And then my coach actually gave me a challenge to do this 30 days of live streams on social media. And I wanted to make it useful content rather than just 30 days of me babbling. And so I created this, it was May, and I created this decluttering challenge to do with people. And I did it myself with them. And it was like the first time I'd done this mass purge since all of these working with clients and everything they had told me about clutter. And I started really applying all this new information that I had never, ever applied before. And I really started the decluttering process. And I started developing this whole methodology around making a space that really was almost like a 3D vision board, like to manifest a whole different life, right? Wow. I wanted to be able to walk again, right? I wanted to be able to walk normally again without the limping and the pain and the, you know, the needing assistance. And, you know, so I started actually like totally transitioning how I worked, how I applied it to my own space. And I started seeing like results. Like I still needed to have surgery. I started noticing changes in my body. And I started really getting unstuck in my thoughts. I started noticing differences in my business, right? Like I started where before I was like super stuck and couldn't like figure things out. All of a sudden I was like, wow, things are growing. And I'm like, okay, like I started really connecting these dots of, if I do this here, of everything I had learned, right? If I'm doing yoga over here, I'm raising energy. I'm affecting the energy of my space to really almost turn it into a generator, right? Of energy to really manifest the vision and the goal that I had in mind. And then I started applying it to like, okay, well, what if I wanted to make more clients in my business? Or what if I wanted to make more money? And then I started getting friends that were sort of in the same space as me that would ask me like, what are you doing? And I had a girlfriend who asked me, like, her coach had told her, you need a self-care space. And she called me up. She was like, so she told me this and I made one. And I was like, okay. And she's like, but I don't use it and I don't really love it. And I had this vision and I was like, oh my gosh. And I got it. I know what to do. And it just sort of evolved into, helping like her turn her space into a sort of 3D vision board for what she was trying to create in her life too. So
that's amazing. It's a lot of like practicality in terms of redesigning, I guess, a space, and particularly a self-care space is really important for our mind, bodies, and souls. You mentioned about declutter. So where does the decluttering fit into this methodology?
Well, so about the same time, actually, that I started like going to school to study feng shui professionally, I had really reached a point in my personal life where I was very unhappy. And I had come to the conclusion that, you know, all of my abusive, miserable relationships and the jobs that I could never grow in, and the fact that I really didn't have, like, I couldn't seem to create the life I envisioned, right? I just couldn't make it happen. I had sort of figured that out a number of years before. And so I was looking for I was the common denominator, like, how do I fix me? And so I'd sort of started on this mental healing journey along the way too. And so I was sort of doing both of those things at the same time. And I was working with clients, and the clients that I was taking on, every single one of them were getting stuck in clutter. We would talk about clutter and we would talk about like designing their space. And I would try to walk them through this process of, well, let's redesign your space. And so, you know, I would try to walk them through this process and they would all get stuck and nobody could seem to get past this clutter part. And so I started doing research. I went back to, and I really found the psychology of it where I had started, right? In school, the clutter, they talk about clutter in feng shui as like this stagnant energy. But when I really started diving into the psychology of clutter and I really started looking at, it's all related to our mindset and our limiting beliefs. And all of the stuff that we pick up as children. And so like, especially when, like in my case, right, I grew up being told so much what a burden I was and, you know, well, I hate you and you're awful. And, you know, all of these things about how worthless I was. And so I'd started on this journey, right. And I'd been on this journey for a long time with working on the healing of those beliefs about me to create something different, all that internal mindset stuff. But then I was noticing all this clutter pieces. And as I started applying that and I started really thinking about all of the things that my clients had said about their clutter, and I really started to connect the dots there around it's the reflection of what we believe. Like everything we own is a reflection of what we see ourselves as, right? Which is really about what we believe, like what we believe we're worth, what we believe we should do or shouldn't do, or what we can do or can't do. And I started making all of these connections. And so this is when I finally started applying it to my life, all of a sudden I just started having like breakthrough after breakthrough after breakthrough. And it all just went back to like decluttering. I've always sort of been that person. I was always like always wanting to get rid of stuff and declutter stuff, but never really thought about my clutter and never really listened to what it was telling me. Right. And it was just in this process of working with clients that I started listening to what their clutter was telling me. And then I started like teaching them, like, I don't know if you hear this, but this is what your clutter is telling me. And let me teach you how to do it. And yeah, and it just sort of took off. Like clients would come back years later and be like, I still use this decluttering method that you taught me. I still use everything you taught me about clutter, and it changes my space. Like I use my space differently. So
what would be an example of when you said it's a reflection of your beliefs, like for you personally, I'm sure there was like many different items, but what would be like a breakthrough example of something that you discovered that is a belief that was in your external world, a piece of clutter that you had to declutter, but that would reflect back on you? Like what would be something that would speak out?
When I first started the whole, like when I really started on this developing even my method, right? It was that month of decluttering, right? There was one thing that I caught there. Actually, it was, and I was sort of in the middle of this battle with the insurance company, and I had tons of mail, right? I was getting a lot of mail about from the lawyers, from the insurance people, from like, and everything came in triplicate. So I had a box in the corner, and it was stuff that I really didn't want to look at. And I just threw all the mail in there. And actually when I put it together on the day of the challenge that I was decluttering paper, and that was the assignment for the day, it actually took me 3 days to declutter paper. And I had 11 bags of shredded paper when I was done. But it all came down to, it was a relationship that had ended very badly, that I didn't really want to look like. It was very emotionally traumatic for me. It had ended, you know, about, I think it was 7 or 8 months earlier. And
So this was like a personal relationship.
It was a very personal.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It was a personal relationship that I just didn't want to face all of the trauma that had happened with it. And I finally was like, I'm going to open this box and I'm going to face this relationship that ended. And I was in a massive depression about it. I was, it was just one of those things that I didn't want to face it. And as I faced it and I started facing this clutter, is really when I started connecting the dots on that. In some cases, like for me, it can be anything, right? And usually there's lots and lots of it. For me, it had to do with worthiness, right? Around, that was my big thing, right? All these letters telling me why I can't go to the doctor and why, you know, it all brought up all these same feelings of shame and worthlessness from when I was a child. Mm-hmm. And this relationship that also made me feel worthless because, you know, like you just leave, like that was just how I felt. And so it really started connecting the dots for me about what clutter really looks like and what it really has to say.
Wow. That's incredible to be able to, you know, really have things speak to you and, you know, that really reflect, especially on those deep rooted beliefs, especially with the unworthiness. I'm sure a lot of people can relate with that. So if someone was new, who was, you know, have these kind of past traumas or current traumas in their lives or relationships, what would be something like one question or some kind of tip that could get them started on the process of recognizing, when I look at this box or these items or the things around me, how do I know that it's actually impacting me in a certain way? And how do I know that this is the thing that I need to face? Like, what's the pointer to be like, that the box of mail is what I actually need to open and address? Because otherwise people don't know. Like, they're like, oh yeah, I've got all these things and, you know, my exes and money things and all sorts of things around them. But to even take the first step to acknowledge, like, this is actually something that's reflecting on me, what would be the thing that you would suggest for them to do to even just take the first step of recognition?
Literally just sitting here today, the first step of recognition is to say, I have clutter. We all have clutter. At 100%, we all have clutter. There's all stuff that we won't want to face. So there, like, literally is step one. I actually have a 5-step method for decluttering and how to go through that whole process. But everyone needs to declutter. So the first step is literally just to acknowledge, like, hey, I'm going to have to, even if I don't think so. I've had clients that come in and are professional organizers who are self-proclaimed minimalists. have no clutter and still will come to work with me. And it's like, here it is. Here's your clutter. It's this right here. Mm-hmm. Because it looks different for everyone. So, and it's not always trash, right?
Right. How do you determine if something is like, because obviously there's Marie Kondo has her own style of things and thanking and be grateful for things, but your method or your style, how is it different from like recognizing what is trash and what should I get rid of versus what should I keep?
Well, anything you can really answer, anything is clutter. If you do not use it, need it, or love it, it's clutter, period. It's very simple. So anything you pick up, do I use this? Do I need this? Do I love it? If not, it's clutter. The biggest difference, you brought up Marie Kondo, and the biggest difference I would say between like my approach and her approach is there's two sides to the coin, right? There's two sides to the clutter coin. There is all the stuff that you love, need, and use, which is not clutter. And that's what Marie focuses on. She focuses on all the not clutter. Keep the not clutter, get rid of everything else, which is great. It works for as much as it works for. But I focus on the other side of the coin. I focus on the clutter itself because the clutter itself has a lot more to say than the not clutter. So when we focus on the clutter itself, the clutter tells us the story that we need to release so that we can let go of not just the physical clutter, but also the emotional and mental stuff that's holding us back and keeping us stuck.
So you said
if we don't go.
Yeah, not clutter. So the things that the positive side of things, that's the positive, like that's the stuff that they want or have an attachment with, but then may need to kind of get rid of that side. But you're saying yours is more on just clutter in general, like zooming out and really just looking at anything that is not useful.
Anything that is, so like I would like to say, what she focuses on, anything that sparks joy, right? Those are all the things that you need, use, and love. Those are the things that spark joy. So that's what she's focusing on. And that's where she, and everything else, she just focuses on what you keep, right? Keep these things, get rid of everything else. When I work with, like when I work with clients, we just take a different approach. We look at all of the clutter. We're still going to declutter it. We're still going to get rid of it. But first, we're going to have a conversation with it and we're going to figure out why it's keeping us stuck. Because what ends up happening is when you go through this method of only keeping what sparks joy, you'll end up getting down to those one or two items. And they might just be small items. Like for one client, it was just a box of pictures. But it was huge energetically and emotionally for her.
Right. Yeah.
And she couldn't get rid of them. She literally couldn't. So by going through this method of only focusing on what sparks joy, we never face the things that really, really, truly keep us stuck. Because we can get rid of all the easy clutter, but those pieces that keep us stuck, we just tuck them back in the closet because they don't spark joy, but we still can't get rid of them.
Yeah, you have that makes a lot of sense.
You have to have a process to get rid of the things that are stuck, right? Because getting rid of the main clutter is easy. We all do that all the time, right? You buy new clothes, you get rid of some old clothes. That's easy. It's the pieces that keep us truly, truly stuck that we can't let go of.
So in that case, for the photos, for example, can be very sentimental memories for certain people. And in that sense, if holding on to that actually keeps you stuck or not being able to let go of that, then that energy is always just going to stay stagnant and stay there until you get rid of it.
Right.
And addressing that, like, you know, letting go of that. Yeah.
And it keeps us constantly reflecting the limiting beliefs that we have, right? Like, because it's, in some cases, it might be something like photos, but in other cases, it might be something like a tea set that just reflects obligation, all the things that you should do, but should do is always somebody else's thing, right? I can't tell you what you should do with your life to make you happy, but if that's what is sitting in your space and that's all you're seeing reflected is all the things you're supposed to do first, when do you ever get to live for you, right? So there's all sorts of stuff that happens with with your clutter in your space and all sorts of interesting things that it tells us. And there's always those one or two pieces that if we don't address them and we don't face them and we don't listen to them, we're just going to stay stuck in right where we are. Yeah. And we can continue to, you know, buy things that spark joy and then get rid of some things, but we're still going to stay stuck where we are in our life, in our business, in our relationships, in all those areas.
I love that you've really, concentrated on the other side of things, because there's like two sides to every coin, like you said. So, and sometimes the other side of the coin is the things that we want to avoid, like forever. And then that may be the very thing that you actually have to go through, like with you and your box and having to really just open that up and address that. Yeah.
100%. Yeah.
Give people a preview. You mentioned about your method. Now it sounds quite special with the 5 steps. Give people a preview. What is that about?
The 5-step method to decluttering
really
is about facing the clutter, right? And going through that process of discovering it, right? Diagnosing it, disconnecting from it, and then dissolving those connections so that you can truly let it go and release it forever, right? Mm. So that you don't constantly keep recycling the same story, right? The same relationship, right? The same job, the same failures over and over and over again. If we don't rewrite our story, we're just going to keep reflecting the same, right? Yeah. And it is literally replaying in your space all the time, because everything that we are compelled to purchase is a reflection of what we believe. And so we will purchase things, like if we have scarcity mindset all the time, or if we have worthiness mindset or obligate, we will buy things that reflect that back to us. And so then all we're seeing is worthlessness or obligation or scarcity. And so we're never really getting out of that cycle and becoming that sort of next level version of who we're meant to be.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, you've been on quite the journey, like from what you've been saying so far. Where are you now? Because being the expert behind this, like it's sometimes it's easier to, you know, like tell everyone and have your method and like do the things for other people, like you said, with your clients. Where are you now in terms of like having all this knowledge and wisdom and applying it all to yourself? Like, do you, you know, with your feng shui, do you have it all sorted out, or is there still things? What's that process like for you now?
There's still things. We are always evolving people, right? We are evolutionary beings, and our space is also evolutionary. So it's always evolving too. I've been living with my boyfriend and I have been nomads for the last almost 4 years. So we move every few months. So I'm still always changing my space too, right? My space is always new and evolving. But I still have to check myself too. When we moved to Portland here in June, just a few months ago. And the first place that we were sort of landed when we got here, was the most depressing place you could imagine. I mean, everything about the space was it just threw me into a massive depression. And it was just, I had to do everything I could to try to shift the energy of that space, and so that I could literally just get out of there and get into something better, because it matters so much that what our space makes us feel like, right? When our space makes you feel like you can't even get out of bed, like, so yeah, it's, I have the knowledge and I apply it, but even when, you know, like that, it took me a couple months this summer. I felt like I really hit a wall. Like that was a big one for me that I hadn't hit in a long time. Like, but yeah, it just, and I had to take a moment and be like, oh, this is it. This is heavy. Like I got to get this energy lifted and get it out of here. And so I still work at it all the time too. I still apply it all the time. To myself.
It really is a practice.
Right. Yeah. The method I have, especially for decluttering, my method of decluttering, I've probably been perfecting it for, you know, 50 years at this point, or, you know, but it's a lifestyle. It's become this way of being. Like, I constantly have to, you know, check in, you know, regularly, you know, it becomes a way of life, so that I know when I'm struggling, the first thing that I want to look at is my space. Mm-hmm. Like, I use it as a tool now, where it's just, I'm feeling some scarcity coming up for me. What's that about? Where's that going on? Let's dig that out and rifle that through that and dig it out of my space. So yeah, I use it all the time.
That's great. Like, you know, people want to have someone who is constantly at their practice, and because it's such an art and science as well, it's just constantly evolving because life never stays the same. Now, come to nowadays, what are you working on?
What am I working on? Well, I'm actually putting together a YouTube channel. I've wanted to start a YouTube channel for, what year is it? For a couple of years now. I started one a couple of years ago, and it was right about the same time I had surgery, and then with recovery and physically and all that stuff, it just sort of got put on the back burner. And so I'm working on putting together a YouTube channel. So lots of free content for people out there. I'm very excited about that.
And on YouTube, it'd be quite visually appealing because people can actually like see how you do things as well.
I'm super excited about that. So awesome. That'll be coming out soon.
Now, come towards the end of the episode, I always like to ask my guests a couple of questions, because we're on the Journey to Fulfillment podcast and you've been on quite the journey yourself. At this stage of your life, with all of the things and the living the nomadic lifestyle and going through change every few months, what does fulfillment mean to you?
Ah, like I am living in my purpose. Like I am doing what I was put here to do. Right. And just knowing that I'm making a difference, that is fulfilling to me.
Mm. That's magic right there.
That is magic.
Really coming back to yourself. And lastly, imagine that you've got your YouTube channel up, millions of subscribers, your business is thriving, your relationship and the feng shui is like ever evolving, and you're constantly, you know, like evolving yourself. There comes to a day where all the successes can go into your box and you can leave a legacy behind, but then it becomes your last day on earth. If that day comes, what would be the message that you would want to send to everyone or leave us with?
Well, I think love yourself and love your space like you are your own, like your best friend, right?
Beautiful words. Love your space, love yourself. Thank you so much for your time and all your wisdom and insights, Crystal. It's been such a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you. It's been so much fun being here. I've enjoyed having this conversation.
Thank you so much for tuning into this episode. If you enjoyed it, be sure to subscribe so you're notified when a new episode is out. Also, rate and review this podcast and share it with your friends, because just one insight could change someone's life for better. Now go out there and make an impact, and I will catch you in the next episode.